Today on Movie Wireless, we talk about the Indian Film Festival of Los Angeles 2024. It's time for Movie Wallers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And yes, Dee as well.
Movie Wallers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. And if you do indeed love the movies, you should be at this film festival.
With us,
yes. This is a special episode of Movie Wallers. We are live from Hollywood.
Although we can't see the Hollywood sign behind us, but we are on Sunset Boulevard.
We are indeed.
We are in WeHo, West Hollywood.
In the Andaz Hotel. And I'm attempting to do this on YouTube, and I'm not sure if the video will work out. This isn't my usual home rig setup, so if it works out, great. If it doesn't, well, you're listening to us anyway. So so happy to be here once again.
Yes, always.
IFLA. So IFLA is one of our favorite film festivals for many reasons. I think not just because of the cultural relevance, but... because they have such a beautiful selection of hand-picked movies that they always bring, some of which we're going to talk about today. Mm-hmm. And obviously, we want to let you know about these movies, because some of these, I have at least a couple of gems
that, yes,
I want to talk about today. But also, you know, these are kind of up-and-coming filmmakers. Sometimes it's a first release. Sometimes it's, a studio that's taking a gamble on doing something different. But just beautiful gems of movies that,
yeah,
don't always make their way.
Yeah. And I think, Joe, we say this all the time, and I think, you know, people must be sick of us saying this, but don't let the word Indian Film Festival fool you, because these are not Bollywood. These are not traditional what you imagine Bollywood movies. In fact, we were commenting yesterday after a day of movie watching that most of the movies we watched were not even in an Indian language. Most of them were actually in an English language or a documentary. So don't let Indian Film Festival pollute your mind or bias you in any way. These are basically South Indian talent associated.
South Asian.
Yeah, South Asian talent associated with the art of movie making.
Yeah, yes, we've been going to the Indian Film Festival of Los Angeles, IFLA, for years now. And they had a recent change in leadership. And I should say that, you know, they've landed on their feet with the first one, with the new leadership, you know.
Fantastic. It's been a great day. Yeah,
great
yesterday.
Great location, yep, for the new. It's at the Landmark in Sunset, which has restaurants around it, easy parking. So, you know,
I was a little worried too.
Well,
because anytime you have a change in leadership from something that is already so well executed, you worry, will they be able to still bring the magic?
I think they've brought more.
I know that now that we've been here, but obviously, yeah, you know, I was a little concerned.
And I have to say, the location is awesome. This is iconic, right?
Yeah.
We are on Sunset Boulevard. This is iconic LA location.
Yeah.
No, it's fun. It's fun to be here. The vibe.
And, go on. I mean, I think one of the great strengths of IFLA always has been their incredible curation. Like, mm-hmm, the movies, yeah, they bring, you can just close your eyes and go in and, you know, you'll be amazed. But this year especially, I mean, you have something really, really small. One of the movies we're going to talk about today, which I'm really concerned if it'll find distribution at all, because it's so small. I hope it does.
Yeah, all I think I know which one you're talking about.
Yeah, all the way to a movie which is going to get a wide release next week, you know,
yes,
through Lionsgate and Roadside Productions. So, you know, it's the whole gamut, and I love that.
Yeah, yeah. All right, why don't we get into it?
I just want to make the point. I mean, I think, if you're looking for a good guide to some kind of hidden gems, and even if you weren't able to make it to this film festival, any of these movies here...
Seek them out.
Just by virtue of the fact that they've been selected by the IFLA programming committee.
And I think they were saying they get 2,000 entries.
Correct. But my point...
I mean, that's ridiculous.
The point I'm trying to make is, just by virtue of the fact that they're here at IFLA, pretty much means it's a good bet that the movie has something to offer that's either new, a new voice, something of merit, something maybe we haven't seen before, or something that's showcasing some incredible talent. So I know we kind of hype up this film festival, but once again, you know, just from the movies that we've seen so far, and we're still halfway through the festival. We've got another day of movies to watch today. It's lived up to
it. So we are covering day one and two.
Let's get into it. Yeah, let's cover as much as we can in this podcast. And if we need to do a part two, we will, or we'll tack it onto one of our other recordings. But again, I think, you know, our job here is to tell you about what we've seen, and hopefully...
And we'll try and keep them short-ish, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go.
So I've got on the list Ben and Suzanne, Mountain Queen, Undercurrent, Girls Will Be Girls. And are we going to talk about Kill today?
Yes.
All right. So those
are we going to talk about Kill?
Are we
Joseph?
Ever?
I was just wondering, maybe that would merit it because it's getting a mainstream release. But yeah, let's just go. But I guess the order that we should tackle him is the order we saw them.
Yep. So and Yasti and I have it down.
Yes. Going with, okay, then I'll shut up.
Yeah, that was the...
Why didn't you just say shut up?
Shut up.
Shut up.
So the opening night.
No respect.
The opening night film was a movie called Dear Jesse, which is directed by Tarsem Singh. And Tarsem Singh, if you don't know, has made these amazing, visually striking movies. He did a movie called The Cell with Jennifer Lopez. He did a few other movies, and this is actually his first movie.
Did he do that?
About
the Sleeping Beauty, not the sleep. Did you the one with Lily Collins?
Yeah. So he's visualist beyond compare. But unfortunately, because this was on Thursday evening, and you know we had bills to pay and work to do, we could not make it for the opening night. But I'm really looking forward to watching this movie, Dear Jesse. Maybe we'll get a link, and you know we can review it. But so we missed the opening night, but we have been pretty. Having a high fidelity, we've seen almost everything else that's been shown.
Yep.
We missed a pair of shorts, but that's about it. Not a pair of shorts in our baggage, but a recording.
Just because you didn't pack well yesterday.
Yeah, I didn't pack well, and it's hot outside. Anyway, so the first movie we saw is a documentary. It's called Mountain Queen, The Summits of Lhapka Sherpa.
Sherpa, yeah.
And that's a mouthful. And
yeah.
You and I talked about that it's a mouthful. This movie actually is getting released on Netflix very soon, in a couple of weeks. So every one of you have an option. You don't have an excuse to not watch it. It's a documentary by Lucy Walker, who is a fairly accomplished documentarian. And it tells the story of the woman who holds the record right now for the most number of summits made to the tallest mountain in the world, which is Mount Everest. She's done 10 so far. An earlier version of this movie was actually shown at Toronto Film Festival when she had only done 9. So they showed an unfinished version, but we get to see the finished version. And it's showing up on Netflix. It's about a single mother who is working as a dishwasher at Whole Foods, who has another life as a record-breaking mountain climber in Nepal. And her name is Lhapka Sherpa, and the movie is pretty much about her.
Yep.
So what do you guys think about that?
Okay, this, I didn't know anything about this one going in. And as soon as Everest popped up, I was like, oh, Joe's going to love this. I didn't realize it was actually a movie about climbing mountains. But here's the thing. It's a really good movie, not just about climbing mountains physically, but climbing and overcoming one's own metaphorical mountains, as well as that physical aspect. This is a really interesting story. And the woman herself, Lhapka Sherpa, is incredible. I really like this movie.
Yeah. Look, as you said, Rashmi, I'm a sucker for anything mountaineering related. It is, in fact, kind of, you know, one of my personal dreams to do the Everest Base Camp trek. So this whole setting, as soon as I realized that we were in for a documentary about somebody who had been there, I was fascinated. Yeah, what a remarkable movie. Ostensibly, it's the story of multiple summits of Everest, but it's not really about the mountain climbing. It's about the person, Lhapka Sherpa, who has led an extraordinary life. She was born in the foothills of the Himalayas from very humble beginnings, and just, you know, she's kind of one of those figures in the world who is a little bit of a misfit. She doesn't quite fit into the norm. She goes against the grain. She's not necessarily combative, but she's very true to herself and what she
determined.
Wants.
Determined.
And mm-hmm. and determined. Yeah. And so she became very inspired by a woman who had summited Everest, but then and who became a hero in Nepal, but then you know, didn't make it down successfully. So she thought, if it, you know, I want to show that girls, that women can be on par with men in terms of you know, these incredible feats of mountaineering, and she proved everyone wrong and then some.
Yeah,
against a very difficult background, I guess, just to finish, of personal circumstances.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things in here. I don't want to get too deep into the specifics of it, but she had an enormously challenging set of personal circumstances, with relationships, with life, with moving around the world, etc.
Yeah, Yazdi.
Yeah, there are two things. I mean, it's a very accomplished documentary, and so two things I want to say. One is that I think just even if you say this could be about, I don't know, a person who has won 10 gold medals skiing, or it could be about a great football player, whatever, it doesn't matter. But I think that it's just a great story of an immigrant. So she was somebody who could not speak English. Through a series of circumstances, she came to the U.S.
Effectively illiterate.
And even now, to the best of my knowledge, I don't know, is working, you know, at Whole Foods.
Correct.
And at the same time, she's achieving these world-class, you know, feats that nobody before has done. Like, nobody's even close. So it's really a fascinating story about what you can achieve and survive. And I know it sounds corny even as I'm saying it, but I think just from that perspective, it's remarkable. And then the other thing also is that this movie could have been entirely about talking heads, about people just talking about her. Mm-hmm. And Lucy Walker, who's the director, has chosen not to do that. There's only a few talking heads. And what she has done instead is she's scoured through decades of reels and footage and grainy material of when she was young and news stories. And it's all very visually shown in a documentary, and particularly towards the last end of the movie, the editing is just tremendous. So this is not just somebody slapping together, you know, some things about a person. There is a lot of skill which has gone into assembling this.
Yeah.
The music and the way things are intercut sometimes, like between what's happening on the mountain versus what's happening to her in real life. So it's actually a very, very well constructed documentary as well. I hope it does well once it comes out on Netflix.
And then an intriguing dimension to this story is this woman's family life, you know, mm-hmm. her children, very much become part of the texture of the movie. I don't think that was by design in listening to the Q&A afterwards. Mm-hmm. You know, that was kind of a discovery as they were going through the filmmaking process, that, you know, the children had a very interesting set of circumstances and adversity that their journey was presented here as well. And again, you know, all of this kind of melanges to something that's much greater than the sum of its parts. It's, you know, again, I'm a sucker for these kind of Everest documentaries. I've watched 101 of them, but this one is very special because of the people and the personal aspects behind it. And 10 summits of Everest.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it says most summits by a woman. I can't imagine that there's many men that have done that. I mean, this is quite extraordinary.
I mean, I think by the time she did the fourth or fifth summit, she was already the most summits
Correct.
By a woman. Mm-hmm. And then she's gone ahead and done six more.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
And I don't want to trivialize, you know, we think these days that summiting Everest is no big deal because you can have, you know, a group of people. Everest is still incredibly dangerous. Like each time
people dying there all the time.
All
they
the
talk
time.
About it in the documentary, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, the fact that she has the grit, determination, and skill level to repeatedly summit in oftentimes, you know, not the best of circumstances. I mean, one of her first summits was in the middle of a storm. You know, most times those summit attempts are abandoned. So again, skill and determination are something else.
Yeah. Yeah, I would. I mean, again, any one of the elements of this, you know, spousal abuse, children, immigration, those are great stories as stories on their own. And then you add that other element, which you've both talked about, makes this a really good documentary. So this would totally be one of my Netflix picks, which I'm sure you're going to take when it comes out.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, great movie. And I just wanted to say what's really interesting to me, and I don't want to jump, put the cart before the horse, but during film festivals, many of the movies that we watch are part of like an audience award. They're up for awards and they give you like a 4-scale rating, which is great, very good, fair and
poor.
And I found myself just ripping the great every single movie we watched, mostly. So, yeah. Okay. Very good. Anything else to say on this one, or should we move on to the second one?
No, we will do our best to let you know when it comes to Netflix.
Yep.
Yeah.
Do you want to say the title again, Yazdi? I know you and I spoke about... I wish the title had been a little bit different because it's such a mouthful, but the title is...
The title is Mountain Queen, and maybe that's all you need to know, Mountain Queen. But yep. The subtitle is The Summits of Lhakpa Sherpa,
yep.
Which is her name.
Yep.
But Mountain Queen will do.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so the next movie we watched is a movie called Ben and Suzanne, A Reunion in Four Parts, and I have the intro to that. And this is the romantic reunion of Ben Santhan Raj and Suzanne Hopper, and it gets thwarted when Suzanne's boss asks her to work during their holiday road trip. This is directed and written by a very bright young talent called Sean, and I'll try not to butcher his name, Senaviratne, and it stars two people, Anastasia Olowen and Sathya Sridharan, and a few other co-cast as well, but mainly carried by those two talents. So, Joe, why don't you tell us what you thought of Ben and Suzanne, A Reunion? I can't say reunion in four parts.
So, in many ways, this is kind of like the anti-rom-com, right? It's ostensibly about two people who have had a relationship, whose relationship has then had the challenge of being put into a distance relationship, and they're coming back together, and some of the challenges associated with that. People change when they're apart, and when they're apart over great distances and a length of time, the person that the relationship itself and the people that they were when they were together become modified in various different ways. So this movie is very much a comedic exploration of that. It's very bold. It's very honest. It's very real and at times very funny. I really enjoyed the performances here. I think, within moments, I kind of landed at a point where, I kind of knew who they were. I knew what they were about. I understood the stage of life that they were in. Very, very accomplished. I thought at first it was going to be a little too precious. It did the 4:3 aspect ratio.
Yeah, I thought that would irritate you.
It's like, we have a Wes Anderson wannabe. But no, this is something completely different, something very original. And I really enjoyed this one.
Yazdi.
Yeah, like you, when I started watching it, I thought, oh, this is one of those very scrappy looking things somebody has put together in a hurry and it's just shown up at the film festival. And boy, was I wrong. That blue screen with the titles, it just looked like somebody had
put the
title card. It looked like somebody had put it together like 5 minutes before they had to submit.
PowerPoint,
you know. And then you realize actually it's very thought out. The colors change on that with each chapter and so forth.
Yeah.
Everything you said, Joe, I think this movie, this is the movie I was talking about. I hope it finds distribution. Maybe it's not for everyone. It needs a little bit of patience. But I think once you're through the first half hour of it, I think anybody who's been in a difficult relationship, that didn't come out right. Anybody who has struggled with their relationship.
Especially a long distance one.
It's going to ring so true in terms of two people who really like each other, but people are who they are and they fight and they have differences in opinions and they have differences in philosophies. And, this movie is like a travelogue in many ways. It's about these two people who have met in the United States, and then she has gone to Sri Lanka to work for an NGO, and she has these very lofty ambitions for doing good in the world, and he's come to visit her there, and the whole movie is set during his visit. It starts with him arriving at the airport and it ends with him leaving the airport. So it's a travelogue in many ways, but these actors and the script really started to grow on me as it was proceeding, and I realized this is not something a group of writers have put together. This is one person's very raw, very real, accounting possibly of a very personal relationship, because bits ring so true and they're so specific. And, one of the great thing about being at these film festivals is we get to meet the directors and the actors and so forth. And, we spoke very briefly with the director outside afterwards. And, I mentioned that I love that this movie is able to carry off this tone where parts of it are just full out slapstick, like almost hilarious comedy. And at the same time, other parts of it are really heartfelt, heartbreaking stuff. And he said that, that, you know, this whole difference of tones was something that, you know, he wanted to get. And he's obviously very inspired by the films of Eric Rohmer. So anyway, I love this movie, and I pray to the gods of cinema that it finds its way to a good distribution platform where it gets more exposure.
Yeah, and Yazzie, the thing you forgot to say was this is based on his own life. So yeah. He and his wife, who did the wardrobe, were at the stage, and you know, it's based on an account they had. They were in India. This is set in Sri Lanka. Yeah, I agree with you. Charming, funny. You know, it captures, you know, when you're a couple, I'm going to have to tread carefully because my other half is here. When you're a couple and you're in that kind of growing range, I think throughout life, there's changing, and then there's changing together. And often when one person makes a decision to do something that affects the other person, but doesn't realize it affects the other person, it can have, you know, it can cause, a milkshake, right? It shakes things up. It can cause little earthquakes, and it explores that piece really well. You know, this is a couple who have chosen not to get married based on principle. They're at that age when they're very principled. They're kind of forming who they are. They're idealistic. You know, she wants to go and work for an NGO and do great things in the world. She wants to change the world. And, you know, he turns up and it's like, she's now vegan and she's now this and she's now that and he's now this and he's now that, right? So there's that kind of changing and then changing together, which I think it captures really, really well. I really got, and I know Woody Allen gets a bad rap these days, but it gave me Woody Allen vibes, and that's a compliment to this movie, right? It wasn't like early Woody Allen. It captures that relationship angst really, really well. I really enjoyed this movie. It made me laugh. It didn't quite get me to tears, which it didn't need to because it wasn't going for that. It definitely wasn't boring. The pacing was perfect. And it's a really enjoyable little gem of a movie.
Yeah. I mean, I think to me, the greatest talent here is is the writing.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say that a lot today because I think, you know, of all the movies we've seen, I think the level of depth of and layering of character building it's kind of a common theme in the movies that we saw on day one and two. There's a truth to these characters. They operate with integrity, right? You understand where they are, what they're doing, why they're doing, even the things that they do that are problematic for them and or other people around them. It's just very well crafted.
Yeah.
And absolutely, you know, everything rests at the feet of this writer and director. But I also want to really call out the two leads who are just tremendous.
Yes.
I mean, this is not a, you know, big, flashy, polished movie. This is a work of love. And these two actors are so believable. And a lot of the
things, we know these people.
We know, and a lot of this is happening filmed outside. It's not being done in a comfortable, you know, studio. It's all, you know, outdoor scenes.
Guerrilla filmmaking.
And they're so good. I just want to say there's a fight towards the end of the movie which has resonated as well as any fight I've seen between a couple in any movie, and that's saying quite a lot. That fight is just amazing.
You should come to our house.
Okay, I will. Or maybe you should do some recordings.
I don't think our fights are as well written, right?
No.
A couple of expletives, a couple of doors get slammed, and then we don't go deep.
I think the other thing I really enjoyed about this movie was, you know, she's the non-Indian in an Indian environment, and it really pulls into question, and I've experienced this myself, is how Indian are you and the expectations of others around you to be Indian when you are who you are, right?
Yeah.
And you know, we heard the term coconut for another movie, which was, you know, hard on the outside, soft on the inside. But often growing up, you know, I'd been accused of being a coconut, which is brown on the outside and white on the inside.
Well, because you grew up in British schools, and yes, so you absorbed a lot of that culture.
Yes,
and,
yes.
And then to people who were from the culture directly,
yes, you know,
there's a perception. So, yeah. But
it captured that really beautifully.
But also the flip side where, and you know, the person who's embracing the new culture,
yeah,
tries so hard to take on elements of that culture that in some ways they might know about things that you as the incumbent might not,
which correct
is kind of
correct
fascinating.
Yeah, it was really good at that. But anyway, Ben and Suzanne, a reunion in four parts, fantastic. Okay, Yazdi, take us to the next one.
So the next movie is a movie made in southern India, specifically in the Malayalam language, and its Malayalam title is Ullo Zuku. But
same to you.
Yeah, same to you. But the English subtitle for the movie is Undercurrent, and it's also by a first-time director, I believe, called Christo Tomy, and it stars the very celebrated female actor Urvashi, who has been in a lot of Malayalam movies, and then Parvati is the other one. They play the two kind of main leads in the movie. The one sentence summary of it is, a family's attempt to bury a loved one is thwarted by floodwaters, forcing them to confront long-buried secrets and lies that threaten their unity. This is a two-hour movie, like I said, written and directed by Christo Tomy. Yes, it is his first time. He's done a lot of shorts, his first-time feature debut. So what do you guys think of Undercurrent?
You know, this has to be so far... No, I don't even want to say that. I love this movie. This is absolutely incredible, just for the fact that the two main protagonists are these incredible women, and watching them face off with each other and dance around one another. And I don't want to give too much away. I knew I was in good hands when within the first 5 minutes, we'd already established who that main protagonist is, and already covered a lot of her life and why she is where she is in her current situation. The tension in this movie almost read like a horror movie at times for me. Just beautifully, it's long, but it's beautifully paced. The cinematography is excellent. It's captured in the rain and the monsoons. Just the production, the acting, the story itself. I've never seen anything like this done like this. Phenomenal movie. I cannot wait for people to watch this.
Joe?
So, I mean, I didn't take as much of an instant liking to this movie as perhaps you did, Rashmi, because I think very early on it kind of establishes itself as kind of a melodrama. Mm-hmm. It feels almost soap opera-like in the way it tells its stories and the way it holds its shots for kind of reactions. And so initially I was kind of thinking, you know, this feels like something that, you know, could be episodic in content, you know, week to week with cliffhangers rather than kind of a feature-length movie. But as we got further and further into it, and as the situations and the moral complexity of the movie started to reveal itself, I kind of sat back and was like, no, this is there's a reason that this made the cut here for this film festival. This isn't the ordinary kind of first-time director, slightly soapy film that I thought it was. This is something that's exploring something a lot deeper. And, you know, I think the strength of it lies again in the writing here. I think, you know, over and over we have kind of characters who are presented with these kind of moral crossroads and moral choices that I feel were crafted to create drama, but at the same time they were fully believable. And even though it did that thing of like, it kind of writes people into a corner.
Yeah.
And then forces people to make a choice, and those choices are almost always with absolute integrity. There's one kind of misstep, I think, you know, a little piece of fortune kind of prevents a turn in the story that would have, you know, and I say fortune, goodness, that's probably the wrong word for that. But it was kind of... It was a chance. But I mean, it was a necessary piece of the plot, because everything that comes after that then goes incredibly deep. Wonderfully written characters here. They're intelligent. They're written with a lot of sensitivity. The pressure cooker of the situation and the tension is just so well handled. I thought this was very, very good.
Yazdi.
Music was a bit heavy-handed.
Yes, but. I was going to say the same thing. Yazdi.
Yeah, so first a correction. This is this director's first feature film. He's done a lot of shorts, but he's also done a documentary called Curry and Cyanide, The Jolly Joseph Case, which, reading about it, I'm very fascinated. It's on Netflix right now. So this is his first feature film.
Add to list, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, the director, during the Q&A afterwards... I agree with everything both of you have said, but the director during the Q&A afterwards said that he kind of put his cards on the table. He said that when he's directing a movie, he wants to squeeze the last drop of emotionality out of every situation. So this is not a film, and I'm not saying it's right or wrong, this is not a filmmaker who wants to be subtle at all. This is a very maximalist filmmaker. He wants people to sob and sob, and he wants to kind of externalize everything, right? So he's, and this is a very maximalist movie, and I think it absolutely 100% is a melodrama, but I think it's a melodrama done right in the best possible way. From the first minute of the movie, I was dumbfounded by how beautiful it looked. It's crisp. It's the colors pop out of the screen. It's this beautiful white screen. And the movie creates such a good sense of place.
Yes.
Like, I don't know of any other place like that where, you know, these people seemingly live, you know, flood-bound for days and days when the monsoons come, and the relentless rain is almost a character in the movie, and it's a very big plot device because, you know...
It's the reason for things happening.
Right. Yeah.
And I'm not giving anything away. The lead character, her husband has died, and they're trying to do the funeral, but they cannot because they're flooded with rains, and all these revelations emerge. So it's a very clever concept, and the director said this actually happened to him, you know, when he was growing up. Mm-hmm. By the way... Most of the movie is filmed in the home, which is the home he grew up in. So I think ultimately the movie is about two women, or maybe a lot of women, who are faced with very, very unusual situations, right? And they are forced to kind of decide whether they will bow to expectation and bow to tradition and bow to what people expect of you versus doing what's the right thing. And there were a couple pieces of dialogue which came late in the movie, which I wrote down, which really got to me and almost made me well up, because, you know, as this kind of maximalist filmmaking goes, it's very, very accomplished. It got to me.
Yeah, I actually wrote down in my notes duty versus desire, mm-hmm. right? And how duty bound some people feel. But this is stunning. This is stunning movie making in terms of telling a story when no one is a good guy and no one is a bad guy, right? It's not out and out black and white. There are reasons for everything, and it captures that humanity about what people want in such a beautiful way.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, again, I think, you know, just to kind of repeat what I said earlier, which is it's the absolute integrity with which these characters operate.
Yeah.
Right. The understanding, you know, they're placed in very difficult circumstances, but the choices that they make are sometimes not obvious until they make them, and then you realize it was the right and only choice that that character could have made. And like you say, no bad guys here.
No.
I mean, there's just very difficult circumstances all around.
Yeah.
And the entire film rests on the shoulders of these two actors.
Yeah.
They are both phenomenal. The lead actress and the actor who plays her mother-in-law, the two of them are just... You know, there's not a lot of screaming, even though there's a lot of emotionality. Everything is
there's
on the surface.
There's a lot of crying.
There's a lot of crying.
And
yes, the movie at every given second tells you how you should be feeling, because that score just
wells. That music,
wells
yeah,
and
yeah,
wells
yeah,
and
yeah, yeah.
You know, so it the movie wants to take you on a ride. It doesn't want you to do a lot of thinking, but it's presenting these moral quandaries in front of you and almost asking you what you would do in that situation.
Right. So,
and
it's, right.
It looks like the work of somebody who's done 15 films before.
Yeah.
Just from a craft perspective, it's brilliant.
Yeah.
And if I can just come back to the score, I mean, I think the score is actually terrific.
Yeah.
So I don't want to make any knocks against the composition here, because there's a theme that carries through the movie, which is incredibly, it's moving.
It's almost Thomas Newman-esque in some ways. It's very rousing.
It's a very accomplished score. I just feel like it was more than we needed for the scene. I feel like the movie could have taken a step up in its tension if the music, like you say, yes, they hadn't constantly kind of directed my emotions. But again, that's kind of a nitpick. It certainly didn't spoil things for me. And like I say, the score itself, props to whoever wrote it, because, you know, they're a very, very talented musician and composer.
Okay. So that was Undercurrent. On to movie number 5 that we watched. I think a first time writer-director called Shuchi Talati, and the movie is called Girls Will Be Girls, and this follows the journey of 16-year-old Mira, whose sexy, rebellious coming-of-age is disrupted by her young mother, who never got to come of age herself. So this stars Preeti Panigrahi, Kani Kasruti, and Kasav Binoy Kiran, amongst others. And the thing to note here is that Kani Kasruti just got given the Best Actress Award, Yazdi, at the Palme d'Or in this year's Cannes for the movie. I keep forgetting the name.
Something about light.
Yes.
The light we can see.
Yes, yes. So what did you guys think of this, given none of you are sexy 16-year-old girls? Yazdi?
Well, not in public.
All we can imagine as light is the movie.
Yeah, all we can imagine. So we've seen quite a few films so far. This, for me, and I desperately love some of the other films, but for me, this is first among equals.
Really?
Yeah, this is the movie that I think is the most ambitious. It's heading into most difficult territory and coming out, you know, clean. It's a miracle of script writing. It's a miracle of acting. It's getting into territory I have not seen Indian movies do before. It's a beautiful demonstration of, again, great acting and mostly a great script. You know, Indian cinema shies away from sexuality.
Yes.
That's been the history of Indian cinema.
Yes.
And for a movie to so boldly go in this direction, and there's no nudity in this movie, I just want to set it clean. But it's very, very sexual, and I think not just Indian films, but across all films, to do a movie about teenage sexuality is a very risky place to be in, right? Because you could come off exploitative, or you could come off patronizing, or you could come off, you know, just pandering. But the movie is none of those things, and I'm glad it's written and directed by a younger filmmaker, because, you know, she probably reflects on her own experiences, but she really gets out there, and the movie talks about jealousies and desire and, you know, fitting in and, you know, how the world imagines you versus what you do, or what you expect from others versus what you might yourself be secretly doing. It's just, I can't stop thinking about it. I love this film.
Joe.
So just correct me if I'm wrong here, but this is a first time feature.
I think so.
Yes, yeah. I think so. I'm going to look it up.
I'm going to look it up as well.
Because in and of itself, that's like a ridiculous fact. Given the level of accomplishment.
She's done a lot of shorts.
Okay, so, this is a filmmaker who clearly, right from the outset, right, we know we're in good hands, right? There's a quiet confidence about the movie, just even the way the credits roll out. This feels like somebody who's done this before and knows which strings to pull, and instantly establishes character from within the first 30 seconds. There's a lot to love about this movie. I like you, Yazdi, this is a level up above everything that we've seen otherwise at the film festival so far. it's a coming of age drama, and Yazdi, I mean, I think you kind of alluded to kind of an original thing. For me, I didn't feel like this was very original. I feel like this kind of coming of age drama has been done over and over and over in many ways. The movie that reminds me of was the Belle Powley movie,
oh, yeah.
The Diary
oh, yeah,
of a yeah. Teenage Girl, which, you know, is a Western kind of version, but. You know, we've seen this kind of sexual awakening movie many times, but this still brings something new, something original. You know, some of it is the setting, but most of it is the writing. Most of it is the interplay between these characters that are just so nuanced. They're so real. The emotions behind every scene, you know, and I'm a little kind of, I won't say biased in my commentary, but in hearing the director speak during the Q&A about how these characters are written, about how each scene, you know, every writer-director attempts to do this, right? They want to create these kind of multi-layered, complex, nuanced characters, but the level of thought and planning that and the performances that she gets from the actors, it's just something that it's among the best movies of the year so far for me. I mean, Head and Shoulders. The lead, what's her name?
Preeti Panigrahi.
She's just spectacular.
Spectacular. That's her first acting role.
Which again
blew me away.
Completely blows my mind. I think, you know, I think a lot of it may be to do with the fact that they cast somebody who is very much like the character.
Yeah.
You know, sure. You know, great casting aside, this girl still acts in a level that I think is award worthy.
Agree.
Just right from the outset. I can't say enough good things about this. I mean, again, the just how beautifully drawn every character is in mm-hmm. this movie, right? The three main protagonists, the mother, the situations that I think could have easily overcooked with a couple of missteps are just dialed back to a point where, you know, we're taken on a journey. We have our own relationships with all three of them, and there are times in the movie where we both like and dislike all of them. So just spectacular stuff.
Yep, this is a great movie. I agree with everything the two of you have said. The film this most gave me, and not because it's similar, but the vibes it most reminded me of was that movie, the great movie from, I think, early 2000s, Towelhead. Do you mm-hmm. remember that one?
Yeah.
It, because of the mother-daughter relationship. And I love that the movie maker, which I had kind of figured as well, confirmed that this is not necessarily just a coming of age movie around a sexual awakening, but it's also a love story, not between the young girl and her potential boyfriend, but a love story between a young girl and her mother at that delicate age when you think you know best, right? You think your parents are clueless and ridiculous and you know everything. And it explores that relationship really, really well. And again, there's not any wasted scenes in this movie, right? There's no fluff. Every scene takes us from step to step in this journey, which is beautiful. Yeah, agree. Great movie. I hope everyone gets to watch something like this.
Yeah.
It would be a crime if this movie
did not get distribution.
Not surface, on. I mean, I would love to see this pushed out into a wide release in movie theaters. But I mean, you know, at the very least, if it doesn't secure some sort of streaming distribution, I think that's an absolute crime given the other stuff that seems to surface there.
Yeah, and I don't know what level of rehearsals went through this. It's also set in a very specific location. There is a very good sense of place. It's set into, you know, in this boarding school. But I think you mentioned this, Rashmi, but the relationship between the daughter and the mother is so it's so well drawn. It doesn't settle into any kind of cliches about the great mother or the hateful mother or the jealous mother or none of that. It's just...
Well, and it's all of those.
It's all of
and
those.
And it's all of those.
And it's very objective, and at the same time, it's kind of leading you on and making you wonder about certain things. The movie has long, long, long takes. You know, I don't know how they managed, because these are very young actors, you know, who are just saying like dialogue, which frankly would, you know, defeat many, many less accomplished actors, yeah. but they make it seem so natural and real and, you know, kind of nervous and giggling and all of that. So it's a phenomenal piece of, I can't wait to see what this filmmaker does next. And I cannot wait for people to kind of discover this movie. It's why we watch movies. I think it's just a remark. I love this movie so much.
Yeah. No, again, I mean, you know, the rivalry, you know, mm-hmm. between the mother and daughter at times is easily overdone, right? I mm-hmm. mean, that those kind of things, those kind of moments, you can roll your eyes at but in this movie, it's done just to the right level. And I think to me, that's kind of my overall feeling about how well calibrated this movie is in terms of what each scene does. It takes you right up to the point of
the pressure cooker being released.
Yes.
Right? When you cook in a pressure cooker, you have to sometimes release the valve. It takes us to that edge and then it releases the valve a little bit and you breathe a sigh of relief. Sorry, I'm overtaking sentence.
I think you said exactly what I was trying to say and I couldn't get the words for it. So that's just wonderful stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. We talk about her and her mom, but then the third character in the movie is just a whole other thing altogether. Like how it plays out.
It's a great character.
It's a great character who you kind of, I won't say too much, you kind of don't think about much until you do.
Yes.
So it's very
He
well
seems
done.
Like a device until he's not.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, the intelligence and integrity of every line of dialogue we can't take away from his performance here because I think he had a lot of
very difficult
things to portray and he did it with, you know, just note perfect.
Because it could so easily lapse into exploitative.
And right?
like somebody who's predatory.
Yes.
Yes.
And the film always manages to walk away from that line at every step. So anyway.
Yeah. In fact, there was an interesting moment in the Q&A where, you know, somebody asked a very intelligent question about the motives of one of the characters and the audience was 50-50 split.
Yes.
And I think that again, for this movie to have a narrative this strong and yet leave those kind of things that are open to interpretation by, you know, us, you know, it puts a mirror on us, like, you know what I mean? It's kind of, is it our personal biases that kind of color what the intentions of these characters are? Again, it's just so well calibrated. I can't speak highly enough of this.
Yeah, people seek out. Girls will be girls.
Absolutely.
Final and sixth movie of day one and two, Yazdi.
So the final movie of that we're going to talk about is the movie Kill, K-I-L-L. And this movie actually is getting, even though it's a film made in India, it's getting a worldwide release on July 4th, at least in the United States. It's being distributed through Lionsgate and Roadside Attractions Movies. The movie was made in its entirety, and then it was Karan Johar, who's a pretty big name in Indian cinema. He's a very famous writer, director. We can talk about him for hours, but he saw this movie and he was so taken by this movie that he became a producer for this movie. And Therma Productions, which is led by Yash Chopra, and you know, they've come on as producers for this film. The movie comes to us with the claim that it is the most violent movie ever made in India, which says a lot. If you watched, you know, Indian movies can get pretty violent. And boy, we'll talk more about it. They were not exaggerating. This movie is written and directed by Nikhil Nagesh Bhatt. And, you know, he has story screenplay as well as directing credits. And he said that, you know, he's a fairly accomplished director, but he said this story has been sitting in his head for like almost 25 years from an event that happened to him personally when he was a young kid traveling on a train in India. But it's, you know, it's the one-liner for this movie is, during a train trip to New Delhi, a pair of commandos face an army of invading bandits. So if you love Train to Busan, if you love John Wick, if you love The Raid, this one's for you. It's opening soon. Kale, what do you guys think?
I love this movie. This is, like you said, Yazdi, this is The Raid, John Wick, and Bullet Train mixed in a bowl, and I think better for it. I really enjoyed this movie, and by the sounds, we watched this with a huge audience at the Egyptian Theater, which is a majestic location in Los Angeles.
On Hollywood Boulevard.
Yeah, on Hollywood Boulevard. On a fantastic screen with amazing sound, and the crowd was having a jolly good time. I don't think I've had this much fun since watching The Conjuring with an audience at South by Southwest. I think we saw that one, Joe. I just love this movie. I don't know why. I'm generally a peace-loving person, but I love these type of action movies. I just love them.
This is
okay, Joe. Go on, poop over it.
No, yeah. not at all. So, you know, first of all, I mean, I'll say, remember our review of Bullet Train?
Yeah.
Right.
And I couldn't escape how self-satisfied that movie felt.
Yeah, that's true.
With itself, right? Yeah. It thought it was really clever. It thought it was.
But it was. Anyway, yes.
This isn't that review.
It came from kind of an arrogance where they just thought that what they were doing was so funny and excellent all the way through. And I couldn't shake off that slime.
Yeah.
This movie is not that. It works so hard from every 3 seconds shot in this movie feels like it's been rehearsed to infinity. Like everything is just so perfectly choreographed and timed, and each death is original. It reminds me in so many ways of John Wick, with that kind of really well choreographed, synchronized. You know, John Wick 3 or 4, was it the one that we saw this last year?
Yeah, 4.
You know, took that to kind of at the next level, where it almost felt like a dance routine.
Yeah,
like
whole, I remember you, but the ballet. Kind of, yeah.
This isn't that. This is a kind of a more brutal, relentless kind of movie. If I'm honest, I found it quite exhausting. Whether that was the movie or whether that was just the fatigue of a long day of films.
Movie number 4.
Plus not having slept super well the night before. I didn't quite tap into the movie's wavelength and energy in the way that I think you did, Rashmi. But that shouldn't take away from what's been accomplished here, which is a really fun, unrelenting, gruesome, violent, fun piece of movie making. Yes, they know they're clever. There's a, you know, the placement of the title card in the movie understands how clever that they have been in what is ostensibly something that's unoriginal, you know, and balls to the wall kind of action movie.
Yeah.
They know they have something special here, and props to them. They can be smug about this, but not in the way that the Bullet Train folks were,
right?
Which is, we know we're smug. It's like, no, you put the work in, you've delivered something that's a level above. Bravo.
Yeah, Yazdi. Now you're gonna poop on it.
No, I'm not gonna.
Okay, good.
I love this movie, and like you, I'm kind of sickened by violence for the sake of violence,
right,
where it is gratuitous, and I actually John Wick 2 and 3 in particular, I was like, come on, why are you just, putting pencils in people's eyes just because you can, right? I was just like, and I was kind of morally upset that a movie kind of is using violence as a way to giddy entertainment. And this movie takes that.
Absolutely.
And just elevates that to 11. And in this movie, it worked. I mean, I am a very inert movie watcher. Like, I usually roll my eyes when people are laughing. I don't laugh so much. I'm a very quiet movie.
You're stoic.
I'm very stoic.
Yeah, you're a stoic movie watcher.
I can tell you, by the time the movie was at its two-third mark, the audience had already erupted in spontaneous applause like four times.
Yes.
And then there was a scene, I'm not going to say about it, there was a scene which came up where something happened, and I was the one who erupted in applause. I was like, yeah! I mean, I was screaming and I was clapping, and I was shocked at myself at how engaged I was. And because, the movie in a way justifies the violence that happens by raising the stakes and taking away from. So it's essentially about a group of good people on a fast train who are attacked by bandits who want to kill them and take all their possession away. It's as simple as that. But the bad guys are so bad that when they get their comeuppance, you enjoy the bloodletting, and I'm not proud of that. I enjoyed every, you know, skull that was smashed into like raw pulp, right? And it's a horrible thing to be saying, but it's, I don't know what it is, how they've accomplished it, but, you know,
it's earned.
It's earned. It's very, very earned. And you know, I don't know what it is. It seems like they have kind of made a leap into an extra dimension in terms of the craft, because with the CGI, there are heads being severed from people's bodies and it looked realistic. I don't know how they did it.
Prosthetics. Fantastic.
I don't know, prosthetics, yeah. Or whatever it was. And I hope I'm not making people, you know, be turned off by this movie. I hope everybody seeks this out when it opens in cinemas, because this is a very unique piece of fiction. And there's one other thing I will say is, when I'm watching movies, I often like to watch them alone, because then I don't, you know, outside of when we go for screenings, like at home, I like to watch it alone because I don't have to worry about my reactions or how I'm doing things. But I forget that one of the joys of cinema can be communal movie watching.
Exactly.
And if you are the kind of movie who enjoys watching a movie and people reacting to it, forget about watching this movie on your screen. Go out to the theater and experience it with a large group of people, and you will have this catharsis with them. And I enjoyed that catharsis so much.
Yeah.
I forgot where I was, even though it was a beautiful cinema screen. I was in the story. I mean, the movie is kind of a little bumpy at the beginning, and I was like, you know, the first 20 minutes, I'm like, what is this? This looks like a bad made television series. But once it kicks in on the train, oh boy, I mean, it's just a whole other level. I'm in awe of this movie.
It was like an 80s action flick at the beginning.
Yeah.
Establish this ultra masculine.
It's a very, very muscular, very masculine
movie. Very bro-esque.
Right.
Yeah, energy, a lot of bro-esque energy at the start, but it doesn't take away anything from the movie. And again, no one, I love it when no one is safe in the movie.
Yeah.
I love it, right? You don't know who's going to get it next. And I love when that happens, because all bets are off then.
I think that's a really good point, because I think, you know, at multiple stages in the movie, people that you think were naturally there for the running time of the movie are just dispatched with. And it's like, okay, now what?
Yeah, right? Exactly. Now what? Now what?
So that was really done.
Although I will say, the lead actor at some point, you know, he was being chopped and killed and shot, and he was like Keanu Reeves in the John Wick movies. He just somehow got up and got back to fighting people. Like, he was almost like, you know, undestroyable. But the other characters as well. And I like that the movie is, it's a short movie. It's, you know, for everything it accomplishes, it's less than 2 hours in length.
Yeah.
And it gets a lot done quickly in and out. And it has a very good sense of claustrophobia, because, you know, there are four carriages to the train which are locked off, and everything has to happen within that. And, you know, very cleverly, the bandits block off everybody's cell phone signal. So it creates this hermetically sealed, you know, like, people have to live or die on this train, which is, you know, heading at a high speed. So, very well done.
If I may just kind of, you know, compare and contrast against this year's Monkey Man, which is another kind of, you know, South Asian diaspora type ultra-violent movie. I think, you know, I know the two of you felt a lot more positively about Monkey Man than did I. But, you know, this is the reason why. I think this movie very quickly gives us something to care about. And I think Monkey Man was just difficult for me in particular, because I didn't know what was going on. The choreography was not as
crisp,
well accomplished.
Yeah.
You know, Yazdi, you say about the sense of place that, you know, the four carriages. At any given point in time, I understood where we were, who was in front, who was behind. Like, there was never a kind of a moment of loss, whereas I think in something that's kind of just a bit less accomplished, equally brutal, and I'm not pooping too much on Monkey Man. It didn't work for me. That doesn't mean to say it's not a good movie. But the level of planning around how this all kind of clicks together just felt much higher. And you know, they spoke to it in the Q&A afterwards, right? Everything here, even the knives, right, are are in the script, right? I think every single physical movement is almost storyboarded out,
yeah,
whether it's visually, whether it's done on paper and pencil.
Yeah.
But this doesn't come together by accident. This is meticulously planned from A to Z, and it shows.
Yes.
It's a ballet.
Yes.
It's a perfectly rehearsed ballet.
And I love the bad guy, Raghav Juyal, who plays this character called Fanny. He's equally deliciously horrible and, you know, well put together as an antagonist that only heightens our protagonist's being, right? I love that play between the two of them as well. So I love the motives. Each one has such a clear motive. This is fantastic. I can't wait to see this one again. And I hope there's a kill too. Like, I really am hoping for a sequel. I hope this is like Die Hard or, you know, John Wick or any of those.
This has,
I can tote or The Raid 2.
This has the makings of a cult movie.
Yeah.
It has the ingredients. And I think its fans are going to propel this to kind of greater heights.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say there's only two ways this movie can go. Either it's going to be a huge commercial mainstream hit, which I don't know. I mean, people still have a problem with, you know, subtitles. So, you know, in the US, I don't know. But in India, for sure, it's going to make bank, like big time. So either it'll be a huge commercial success, or it's going to be definitely a cult classic, right? I cannot imagine people even 5-10 years from now going to watch this, like on a Sunday night, and just having a great time with
it.
Because there is this cathartic kind of, you know, sense of, you know, the bad guys getting it really bad and the good guys somehow prevailing against impossible odds. So it's almost the language doesn't matter at some point.
I was going to say, this is the most diverse audience I've ever noticed. Mm-hmm. I mean, the audiences at IFLA, thank goodness, because I hope it speaks for how good IFLA is generally more diverse than in any other year that we've been here. But this particular screening, and I don't know if it was just the location of the screening or the fact that, you know, Lionsgate and all those other large companies are involved, it had a really, I think, beautifully diverse audience who seemed to all be having the most fun.
This has the magic that I think will create crossover.
Yes, I hope so.
And I we speak about, you know, the San Diego film critic crowd. You know, I think right now just of the people that we regularly kind of view screenings with, every single one of them, this would be their cup of tea.
Yes.
And you know, as critics, we're afforded sometimes the privilege of that position of where we can be tastemakers. I think critically, this has so much going for it that it should punch its way through into the mainstream.
Yeah.
And I pray for that.
Yeah. All right.
I mean, I'm thinking of something like RRR, which came out. It was released a little bit. It didn't make it very big when it was shown in the theaters. But then, you know, it got on Netflix and then it got a whole life of its own and it became a huge smash.
Winning the Oscar for best song. Yeah.
But and maybe the same will happen to this movie. But I think, again, you as a movie lover are denying yourself one of the greatest pleasures you can have sitting and watching this movie in a theater. And you need to seek it out in the theater.
Agree.
You know, don't wait for it to get on Netflix or somewhere else. It'll be, you know, a discount version of the movie watching experience. You need to see this communally. Yeah.
Yeah. Love.
Yeah.
All right. Let's close up the podcast for today.
Because we've got to get to the next batch of screenings.
Indeed, yes. So there's more to come from our IFLA coverage. We'll either do this as part of a future podcast, or we'll do another standalone. We'll try and do this. But the movies we covered today were Ben and Suzanne, Mountain Queen, Undercurrent, Girls Will Be Girls, and Kill. Please, if you listen to this podcast and you have any interest in anything that we've said, go find these things. Next time, make sure you come to IFLA. We've said it before, we say it many times, and we will repeat ourselves constantly, because this is one of the best little film festivals that I think is out there right now. It has a diversity of different materials, themes. The programming is terrific. We can't say enough about IFLA. All right, until our next podcast then, it's too many movies, too little time, never so true as it is at a film festival. A goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.